And in this time of remembrance, we can probably think of many stories of men and women who did just that in the wars of this last century. And I heard the story of one such man, and his name was John Robert Fox, and he was a soldier in the Second World War. He was a first lieutenant in one of the battalions fighting in Italy. And I have a picture of him for us, so you can see him there. This is a picture of John Robert Fox. And as I say, he served in Italy. And his grave, in fact, is in Italy now. And the reason is because he, on the December 25th, Christmas Day, in 1944, he volunteered to stay in a small Italian village that was being besieged by German forces in order to direct defensive artillery strikes. His job was to radio in the coordinates to the artillery, and they would fire on the coordinates that he gave them. And in his final transmission, Fox gave fire coordinates which shocked those manning the artillery. The reason that these coordinates shocked the artillery so much was that despite their double checking to see if they were right, there was no mistake. Fox was calling down fire upon his own location. Fox radioed in to the artillery and he said, "I want you to fire on the location where I am." The reason for this was because Robert John Fox realized that the German advance would not be hindered unless they fired in that exact spot. It meant that he had to sacrifice his life, but he knew more lives would be saved. And as I say, you can still see his grave in Italy to this day. This is a picture of his memorial in Italy today. And he rightly has received the Medal of Honor for his bravery in giving his life for his friends. That is the story of Robert John Fox. But the tragic thing is that, as we saw in the video that we have looked at, that whilst we remember the sacrifices of men like Robert John Fox and thousands, if not millions of others, who gave their life for us, we can fail to remember a greater sacrifice, a sacrifice that is even more meaningful to us. Those who died in the First and Second World Wars were dying for our freedom. But the truth is, one day we also too will die. But in the Bible, the authors of the Bible tell us of a sacrifice that isn't just that we might live for a while longer on earth, but that we might live forever. And the book of Romans chapter 5 verse 8 tells us that God demonstrates his own love towards us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. God demonstrates his own love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Robert John Fox was willing to die for his friends. This verse tells us that Christ was willing to die for his enemies. But you may object to that and you might think, well, that doesn't make any sense. How could Jesus die for his enemies? In the case of Fox, he was fighting against the Nazis and he was dying for his friends who were on his own side. He willingly gave his life so that those who were fighting with him on his same side could live longer. Are we saying that the equivalent would be that Jesus was dying for the Nazis? Why on earth would anyone ever do such a thing? Why would anyone ever die for the enemy? Would you give your life for someone who hates you? Or would you give your life for someone who you hate? Well, there are three things that we need to remember to understand what Jesus did for us. This is Remembrance Day. Well, these are three things that we need to remember to understand Christ's sacrifice for us. And the first thing that we need to remember is that it is we who are God's enemies. And we're not speaking of merely the Nazis. We're talking about the whole human race. We all are enemies of God. If we were to relate ourselves into the story, Jesus is, to a small extent, like John Robert Fox. But we're not like his fellow soldiers. We're not like his fellow friends. In the story, we are like the Nazi army. We are the people who are fighting against God. And our battle against God isn't justified, as those Nazi soldiers were not justified in their war. We are enemies of God. We are on the wrong side. But you might say, that's a bit harsh. And it's true that we perhaps are not like the Nazis in every way. I sincerely hope we are not like the Nazis in every way. They were certainly evil in a unique and special way, perhaps. But the truth is, we are all guilty to a greater or lesser extent. All of us have done evil. We may not be guilty of racism. We may not be guilty of genocide. But we are all guilty of refusing to let God's rule, or let God rule over us in our lives to a greater or a lesser degree. Jesus himself said that the judgment that we give out on others will be given out on us on Judgment Day. So what that means is that even by our own standards, we often don't live up to them. We know that ultimately we are guilty. Imagine it like this. Imagine that at birth, a recorder, voice recorder, was put around your neck, and that recorded every word that you ever spoke. So it recorded every time you said to someone else, "You lie to me." Or it recorded every time that you said to someone, "That's not fair." Or, "You pushed in front of me in the line." Or, "Don't speak to me like that." Or, "You lie to me." Every time you say these judgments on other people would be recorded. So when it came to Judgment Day, when it came to the day when you finally stood before God and God, as it were, asked you why you should be let into heaven, God could simply press play on that voice recorder and it would record and play for all to hear all the times that you have judged others. And all God would need to do is ask you a simple question. When have you acted in a way that you judged others for yourself? When have you acted in a similar way to which you judged other people for doing for you? You may have complained when people have lied to you, but when have you lied to others? You may have complained when someone has been unfair to you, perhaps has stolen from you, but when have you stolen from others? Perhaps you've been upset when people have spoken to you in a certain sort of way, but when have you yourself not spoken to others with all the respect that you ought to have done? Do you see how we're all guilty? And the judgment that we give out on others will be given to us. And by that standard, we're all hypocrites. We are all guilty in God's sight. And that means we are all God's enemies. And we're very quick to complain, aren't we? When politicians break the rules, when they break COVID regulations, or when they tell lies, or when they steal through their tax returns. But the truth is, if we were to be honest, have we also kept those same laws, those same rules that they have judged? Have we always been rigorous with COVID regulations? Have we always told the truth? Have we always being honest in our tax returns. This is why we should be very slow to judge other people, because the standard that we give out on others will be given out on us. So you see, we are God's enemies, and that's a really important fact to remember before we start complaining about what other people have done, or even about what God has done. The truth is, we stand guilty before God. What does that verse say? That verse says, God demonstrates his own love towards us in that while we were still sinners, while we were still God's enemies, Christ died for us. But you might object again, and you might say, but how can Christ die for his enemies? That just simply doesn't make sense. How could, as it were, Jesus die for the Nazis? If John Robert Fox had given his life for the enemy, we wouldn't be praising him and commending him as a hero. We would be condemning him as a traitor. How can you fight for, how can you save the enemy who are evil? And the same question could be asked of God. How can God pay the price for his enemies? How can God be on the side of his enemies by saving them? By saving them, surely he is condoning what they're doing. Surely he is condoning our sin by saving us. And that's exactly the problem that the Bible states, because that is true. This is the terrible situation we find ourselves in. Because we put ourselves against God and put ourselves against righteousness and justice and peace, then we put ourselves against God himself. And God cannot merely just forgive us. This is the second reality that we need to remember. The first one was that we are God's enemies. The second thing that we need to remember is that God cannot merely just forgive us any more than the Allied forces could simply forgive and forget what the Nazis had done, even after they surrendered. There were obviously the trials which came afterwards, and it's because what they had done couldn't simply be swept under the carpet. And it's the same for us. God cannot simply sweep our rebellion under the carpet. For him to do that would be like him stepping down from his throne, removing his crown and giving it to us. It would be like God surrendering to us. He cannot condone our rebellion. Imagine it like this. There was once a story, and I understand, I believe it's a true story, but I haven't been able to verify it. There was a story of a king, and he was a good and righteous judge and king in his land. And he had a rule in his land that theft would be severely punished. And the law was that those who committed theft would receive 30 lashes. Well, one day, a woman was brought to the king. And they told him that she had been found stealing. She knew what the law was, and there was no doubt of her guilt, and the punishment would have to be 30 lashes. But the king, even though he was just, he was horror-stricken when he saw the woman, because he recognized her, and he recognized her as his own mother. He recognized the woman was his own elderly mother who was guilty of theft. Now, in that moment, that king had a choice. He could either simply decide to forgive his mother, but then in doing that, he would essentially be relinquishing his throne. He would be saying that he was no longer worthy to be a judge. Can you imagine the townspeople and his citizens of his country seeing him show partiality to his own family and not judging theft when that was his job to do? You can imagine the people even condemning him himself for condoning theft. How can a king possibly say that theft is okay. How can he possibly let this thief go free, even though she is his mother? But the other option was to give his own mother 30 lashes, his own elderly mother, who perhaps may not even survive the punishment. Well, the king made his decision, and he stepped down from his throne, but then he took off his royal robes, and he bared his back, and he said that he would bear the 30 lashes for his mother. He knew that the law had to stand, the punishment had to be given, but he said he would take it on himself. He would bear the brunt of the punishment that his mother deserved. Now that's a very small, inadequate illustration of what God did for us. Like that king, God cannot just merely forgive us. He cannot merely just pretend that our rebellion and our turning our backs on him has never happened. But what he could do was take the punishment on himself. And that's what he did through Christ. He stepped into this world. He became a human being. And he, as it were, bore his back for us. Now, on the cross, Jesus was taking our punishment instead of us. He was demonstrating for all to see that sin, rebellion against him, matters. Theft matters. Greed matters. Deceit matters. But instead of pouring his wrath on us, he poured it on his son. The wonderful thing is, God had found a way to bring peace without war. Sadly, in this world, that's not always possible. Sometimes, sadly, we cannot find resolution to conflict without indeed having that conflict, having that war. But God, in his wisdom and in his grace and in his love, he found a path for peace without resorting to war. He didn't come as a warrior. He didn't come as a conquering king to judge this world, which was his right. Instead, the Bible says he came as a baby. He came as a servant. He didn't come with a sword or a gun, but he came in a manger, in a feeding trough, as a little baby. He didn't beat his enemies into submission. Instead, he showed love for his enemies by taking their punishment on himself. That's the wonderful news of the gospel. The gospel news that God is extending peace to us, even though all we deserve is death. He didn't come to take life. He came to give his. And on that cross, he suffered the penalty that we all deserved. And on that cross, he condemned racism. He condemned deceit. He condemned gossip. He condemned backbiting. He condemned jealousy. He condemned envy. He condemned two-facedness and hypocrisy. All these things that we ourselves are guilty of, God condemned on Jesus Christ. So that if we're willing to accept that sacrifice, there's no punishment left for us. But you might say this still doesn't make sense. Because what happens next? If God has found a way to bring peace to his enemies, what happens to the enemies now? What happens to us now? Imagine if in the Second World War, the Nazis had just simply been forgiven. The Allies had found some way without war to subdue the Nazi army. What happens next? Those Nazis are still alive. Surely the problem would still exist, because those Nazis would still live on and they could potentially spread their evil elsewhere. How does God address the problem of our sin inside us, who we are on the inside? Yes, he may have dealt with our past sins that he has died for, but how does he solve the problem of who we are on the inside? Well, it has been said there are two ways to destroy an enemy. One way is to kill him. The other is to turn him into a friend. But as with any friendship, it's two-way. Friendships have to be two-way, or else it is not true friendship. And this is the third thing that we need to remember. The third thing we need to remember is that God is offering us friendship, but we need to accept it. We need to accept it. The first thing we need to remember is that we are God's enemies. The second thing we need to remember is that God cannot merely forgive us, but he has found a way to forgive us through his Son. But the last thing we need to remember is that we need to accept that offer of friendship for ourselves. God, as it were, through Christ, is holding out a hand of peace to us. But like with any peace agreement, it has to be agreed on both sides. And God has his terms, and his terms are this. We need to unconditionally surrender to him. God says we need to lay down our arms, lay down our fighting against him, and to instead submit to him, to accept his offer of peace. That is how we enjoy the forgiveness that God offers. It doesn't come to us automatically. It isn't simply a gift that is given to us without us having any part in it at all. God has done everything necessary, but we need to accept the gift. We're coming up to Christmas time. I hope that doesn't worry you too much. But we're coming up to Christmas time. And if someone hands you a gift, you have to receive it to enjoy it. It's no good leaving it under the Christmas tree. It's no good leaving it all wrapped up. To receive that gift, you have to open it for yourself. And God says we do that. We accept the gift of Christ by surrendering to him. Now that might seem scary. To many of us, that seems like too high a price to give. We're afraid of what that means for us. Surely it means we lose our freedom. It means we cannot do what we want to do. And in a way, that's true. We can't do what we want to do. But the reality is, what we want to do is often destructive to us. We all know this for ourselves in our lives. Often where our hearts take us, where our hearts lead us, the things that we want to do, lying and stealing and greed and all these things within us which lead us down wrong paths, we know in our own lives that they lead to destruction. How many broken families do we need to see? How many broken countries even do we need to see before we understand that our desires often lead, always lead to destruction. Our only hope is submitting to the God who made us, submitting to the one who truly knows what is best for us. We see that as a terrifying prospect, when actually it's our only hope to submit to a God who loves us, who cares for us, who was willing to send his Son to die for us. The problem is so many people reject that offer of peace. This is why, in fact, wars happen. If everyone was willing for peace, if everyone wasn't so stubborn, there would be no wars in this country. Those who are in the wrong, or in this world, those who are in the wrong would simply relinquish their claim and would stop being stubborn in their evil. But because we are stubborn, that's why wars continue. And the greatest war, the most important war, is our war against God. So as we remember the soldiers who have died and given their lives for us, let me ask you a question. Have you submitted to God, or are you still stubbornly fighting against him? We all long for wars to cease. We all long for the bloodshed to end. Are you willing for your war against God to cease? Are you willing to take the crown of your life off your head and put it where it belongs, with Jesus, who died and gave his life for you? That's the message I'd like to leave you with on this Remembrance Sunday. We're now going to play our final hymn, our final song, and it's a song which is all about that sacrifice which God has given for us and how grateful, how thankful we should be for it. So this final song, it's a fairly short one, but the words mean a lot. It's Jesus, thank you.